welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 87 for Friday, March 19, 2010. I'm back in downtown Denver after a terrific time in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest. It is snowing out my window here in downtown Denver. The sheets of snow are just racing across from left to right in front of my window, and I can barely imagine the 70-degree weather that we had down in Austin for South by Southwest. So quite a change in the weather, but it was great to be down there. A highlight of my stay in Austin was the chance to meet up again in person with Joshua Talent, who is founder and CEO of eBook Architects. His ebook conversion consulting business is thriving, I'm glad to report, to the point where he is adding his first employee. If you ever see yourself one day publishing a Kindle book, you'll learn valuable tips from Joshua in the interview in this episode. And no matter what your interest in the Kindle, I'm sure you'll be intrigued to hear what this old hand in the Kindle sphere has to say about the iPad, ebook pricing, and what to look for in the next version of the Kindle, among other things that we talked about. It's been a very full week for Kindle news, including yesterday's debut of the Kindle for Macintosh software, reports of Amazon playing more hardball with the publishers, and a couple of new details about the iPad's book reading software, which I will be trying out for myself when the one that I pre-ordered arrives in just 15 days. For this week's tech tip, I will discuss saving content that you have not purchased in the Kindle store on your computer as backup and just as another way to read it in case something ever happens to your Kindle. And this will give me a chance to look at the Kindle for Macintosh application, which I just installed on my own Macintosh equipment, and also to compare it with what the Kindle for PC software, which I have on another computer of mine, a PC. In content, I'll tell you about an author whose novels were the bestsellers in the U.S. for four of the years, 2000 through 2008, and how he has apparently had a change of heart on the matter of ebooks because his books are now available in Kindle form and another ebook form. As always, I'll close with your comments this week on the iPad, Kindle for Mac, and another strategy-packed job posting, this one at Apple. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes and Zune stores or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. You can also hear the Kindle Chronicles on your smartphone using a handy podcast manager named Stitcher, which you can learn more about at stitcher.com. With that, let's turn to the news. Greg Montague was the first one to alert me Wednesday evening that the Kindle for Mac software had arrived. Amazon announced that this software was coming soon back on December 15th, which had me thinking it would have arrived maybe in 1 month, maybe two, but not three. That's how long it took for soon to come, as it turned out. It's still a big move, which generated lots of coverage on the internet this week. Following the November 10th, 2009 introduction of Kindle for PC software, this additional software means that it is now possible to read Kindle content on something like 98% of the personal computers in the world, as well as iPhones, iPods, and BlackBerry devices, and soon iPads. Here are some of the details on the Macintosh software, and I'll have more information on it in the tech tip. You need to be running Macintosh OS 10.5 or 10.6 to run the new Kindle software. That's Leopard or Snow Leopard. It does not yet contain the ability for full Kindle search, the kind that you can do on a Kindle, but you can search on the screen that you're looking at with Command F. You can't read your newspaper, magazine, or blog subscriptions on your Kindle for Mac, and that's the same as Kindle for PC and the other devices except for the Kindle itself. You can see highlights that you've made on your Kindle or mobile devices. I know that that's true for the iPhone. I can make highlights on my iPhone. I haven't tried it on an iPod Touch or a BlackBerry, but I assume the same is true. And when you've made highlights somewhere else, it's fun to see them on your computer using the computer software for Mac or PC because it shows up in yellow as if you've put a yellow highlighter through it on a page. You can also see the notes that you've made elsewhere, but you can't make notes or highlights within the Kindle for Mac or PC software. That feature is coming, Amazon has said. The really cool thing that Kindle for Mac does, which is also the case for Kindle for PC, iPhone, iPod, and BlackBerry, is it remembers what page you were on when you left off reading your book on another device. This is for content that you purchased at the Amazon store. I am always delighted by this because it suggests kind of a helpful intelligence in the system, giving me a gentle offer of aid to find me, help me find my way to where I want to be in the book that I'm reading based on where I was when I left off on another device. It's something that no other e-reader platform offers at this point, as far as I know, and it's simply fantastic. Item 2 in news, via the New York Times on St. Patrick's Day, we got a rare peek into the intense negotiations going on between Amazon and the publishers over pricing and contract terms for ebooks as the countdown continues to April 3rd when the first Apple iPads will ship. Motoko Rich and Brad Stone penned an article titled "Amazon Threatens Publishers as Apple Looms," and it began, Amazon.com has threatened to stop directly selling the books of some publishers online unless they agree to a detailed list of concessions regarding the sale of electronic books, according to two industry executives with direct knowledge of the discussions. The article states that Amazon is demanding that the Apple V publishers, Macmillan, Simon & Schuster, Hachette, HarperCollins and Penguin lock into 3-year contracts and guarantee that no other competitor will get lower prices or better terms. And Apple, the authors report, quote, is requiring that publishers not permit other retailers to sell any ebooks for less than what is listed in the iBookstore. That's the bookstore that will come with the iPad. So the publishers have sought to renegotiate agreements they have with Amazon, under which they sold books to it at wholesale, allowing Amazon to set the consumer price, the Times continued. I find it difficult sometimes not to see a pro-publisher bias in Motoko Rich's reporting, and that would be understandable given how important an industry publishing is to New York City. Brad Stone, who's based in San Francisco, seems better tuned to the tech sector, and I would have loved to have seen the emails back and forth between the two of them in this jointly bylined article. Let's just say I think Motoko Rich, whose name appears first in this article, probably wrote the bulk of it. Anonymous leakers always have an agenda, and to me, it's pretty easy to detect one in this article. If Amazon is indeed threatening to go nuclear again by withholding the buy button, as it did briefly with Macmillan, it might be helpful to the publishers to have the paper of record report something like this. This is from the article, quote, "But if Amazon tries to enforce its demands by removing buy buttons from some pages again, some believe it could harm its reputation in the eyes of customers and the publishing industry." It continues, "They cannot remove the buy buttons from two major publishers' lists without doing serious long-term damage to their own brand," said Mike Schatzkin, chief executive of Idealogical, a company that advises book publishers on ebooks. As a customer, an ebook customer, I find that pretty funny, actually. Serious damage to Amazon's brand? Not among ebook readers like myself, who believe Amazon has been valiantly holding the line against upward pressure from the publishers and has been pricing Kindle books fairly and in a manner which has completely jump-started the entire ebook sector. Still, these backgrounders from the New York Times are useful in giving glimpses of the ebook pricing war. I would bet we'll see more pieces like this between now and April 3rd as the battle rages and includes, as the article says, publisher by publisher negotiations with Amazon and Apple. They quote Evan Schnittman of Oxford University Press as saying, "Amazon's strategy, quote, is to work very hard to limit participation in the agency model to only the big four or five firms that are already announced. This would leave 50 to 60% of the content out there subject to the standard distribution terms, enabling Amazon to promote and price as it does today, and forcing Apple to have to compete with Amazon's strength." Item 3 in news, speaking of iPad, news.softpedia.com had an item on March 15th reporting that you will be able to touch a word on the screen within the iBooks application and the definition will automatically pop up somewhere. If that works well and it's the same Oxford American Dictionary as the Kindle carries on board, I might have to give the word lookup advantage to the iPad. That sounds like a pretty neat way to be able to look up a word. Another feature I hadn't seen reported is that you will be able to adjust the brightness of the iPad from within the iBooks application, which might help offset the Kindle's likely advantage because of how the e-ink screen is simply easier on the eyes in most situations, at least. That's how I find it compared to an LCD screen. I did pre-order an iPad in the first moments. They were available at 5:30 a.m. Pacific time on March 12th. That was during my stay in Austin for South by Southwest Interactive. I also reserved one at the Cherry Creek store here in Denver because I thought it'd be fun to be down there and enjoy the rush of a launch day. But I'm not sure if I'll actually go and fetch it unless it becomes clear that my mother really would love to have an iPad for her 81st birthday, which is coming up next month. I promised myself I would order the cheapest version of the iPad. That's the 16-gigabyte Wi-Fi only model for $499. But my total bill ended up to be $713.01 after I'd added a dock, a USB power adapter, AppleCare, and expedited shipping. For the same price, I could have bought 2¾ Kindles, but I already have plenty of Kindles, and I truly am interested to explore this brand new device. The buzz at South by Southwest Interactive was pretty intense around the iPad, and one session I attended had a panel discussing potential uses of it, and it was so jammed they had to turn people away at the door, and the people being turned away were very unhappy about it. It was nearly getting physical out there in the door as people were trying to get in, and I myself snuck in an unguarded door and got one of the last seats that had been saved for me by my friend Brian Person. The reports that I've seen so far indicate that Apple may have sold 200,000 units within the first week of pre-orders. That would have been in this past week. And one of the South By panelists asserted that the iPad is going to be so successful, even as something to type on, that he'd been able to type pretty quickly on it. And he said he thinks that the iPad will render the laptop computer the rotary phone of our generation. We'll see. For this week's tech tip, I have downloaded a non-Amazon document. In this case, it was a screenplay by my talented nephew, Jesse Betleon, who is graduating next month from Brooks Institute in Santa Barbara, California. He emailed me a PDF, which I emailed to my address at free.kindle.com with convert in the subject line. The Kindle version, which came back from Amazon, this is at no charge, is better for reading than the PDF because I can highlight and take notes for the feedback that I want to give to Jesse. With my Kindle attached by USB, I drag the .azw document to the documents folder of my Kindle, and I've been making notes and highlights as I read it on my Kindle. Now, with the Kindle from Mac installed on my computer and my Kindle attached via the USB cable, I was able to drag Jesse's screenplay file and its associated highlights and notes file, which ends in .mbp, from my Kindle's document folder into the My Kindle Content folder. That's a new content folder which was created within the Documents folder of my MacBook Air when I installed Kindle for Mac. To compare the process, I did the same thing with my Dell laptop computer, that's a PC, where there is now a My Kindle Content folder within a folder titled Lens Documents in my computer. So it's a very similar system that the software installs a folder for Kindle content on either PC or Mac. If you have a document or a book on your Kindle that you did not purchase at Amazon, you will notice that from within the document, when you press the menu button, this is when it's on the Kindle, the choice titled Sync to Furthest Page Read is grayed out. And that means that when you open that document on Kindle for PC or Mac, you won't automatically be offered the chance to sync to the last page read. So if you put a document that you didn't buy at Amazon on your computer, you're not going to see the sync to last page read feature. And so that's a drawback if you're reading non-Amazon content, such as books from Project Gutenberg, many books, etc., or private items like the one that I'm using here for this tech tip. But one thing the software for PC and Mac do offer is the assurance that if something happens to your Kindle, you will now have a way to read all of your Kindle content, no matter how you obtained it. For your Amazon-purchased content, it remains in the cloud with your archives, and then you can just pull it down to your PC or Mac, your iPhone or BlackBerry, as well as a new Kindle. If you've lost your Kindle and you buy a new one, you can just bring all of that content down from the cloud. For your non-Amazon books that you want to keep in any way, you'll probably want to put them on your computer system on a hard drive or something because they never get a berth in the cloud. the handiest place, if you have Kindle for PC or Mac on your computer, is in the Kindle content folder within your main documents folder. I'm really looking forward to when the Kindle for PC and Mac software is upgraded so we can make notes and highlights on Kindle content on our computers. That will be really handy. As it is, the Kindle for PC and Mac software does have a nice readable way to see all of the highlights and notes made elsewhere. On both the Mac and PC versions, there is a button at the upper right titled Show Notes and Marks. If you click on that, you will then see a choice where you can specify all notes and marks, or notes only, highlights only, or bookmarks only. I really can't find any major difference between the Mac and PC versions of the software, but I did find one minor one just now when I adjusted the font size on Jesse's screenplay. When I did it on the Mac, it changed the font choice from a typewriter-like font, maybe it was Courier, which was what he had in his original PDF file that he emailed to me. And when I was changing the size, it automatically changed the font in his document to something that, to my eye, looks like Times Roman. This is actually preferable for readability, but it was a little scary to have the font changed without my asking the program to do it. On the PC software, by comparison, when I changed the font size, the typewriter font remained in all the sizes that I tried. Both of the computer versions, Mac and PC, offer 10 font sizes, including some really big ones, compared with only 6 on the Kindle itself. If you discover some tricks or hidden aspects of the Kindle for PC or Mac software, I'd sure like hearing about them. You could email them to me at podchronicles@gmail.com. Joshua Talent of Austin, Texas, had been formatting ebooks for 6 years before the arrival of the Kindle in November 2007. I first interviewed him for the podcast in December 2008. That was 65 episodes ago. And since then, he has founded and serves as CEO of eBook Architects. That's a business that does conversion and consulting for authors and publishers of ebooks. I owe him a big thanks for alerting me to an event that was not on the official South by Southwest Interactive schedule. It was a digital publisher's happy hour on Sunday, March 14th at Max's Wine Dive, just a few blocks from the Austin Convention Center. Joshua introduced me to several people involved in digital publishing, whom I interviewed for the Reading Edge podcast, and I also interviewed Joshua himself for this week's episode of the Kindle Chronicles. I began by asking him if the Kindle still accounts for the bulk of his business.
It is still the bulk, but it's mostly the bulk of my conversion services because of what people are looking for. Most authors know that they can get their book fairly easily up on the Kindle through the digital text platform, so it's a really easy process. And they know they can make sales because Amazon's making 70% or so of ebook sales right now. So they know that, hey, that's the market I want to get into. Let me get that Kindle book, get it out there. But I also offer conversions into EPUB, eReader, .lit, you know, any other format, Smashwords. So basically any other format that you can get your content out into, I can get your content in that format as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the opportunities for an author. You say that it looks like the Kindle is accounting for 70% of ebook sales at this point?
That's the number I've heard. I mean, there's kind of a range. Some people say 90, some people say 70. I think 70, 50 to 70 is kind of a more logical number when you look at sales from smaller distributors, smaller retailers, and things like that.
Do you expect the iPad to make a huge change in that share?
I think the iPad will take some of market share from Amazon, but I don't think it's going to change things on a huge level. You know, Apple doesn't have a real ebook centric device. You know, the Kindle is just, it's made for reading. You know, that e-ink screen is perfect for someone who just wants to be able to read a book. They don't necessarily need to interact with the web. They don't necessarily need to have their email or their Twitter stuff jumping up in front of them all the time. The iPad's really made for people who want more interactivity. It's almost akin to a netbook more than it is to an ebook reader. And so the functionality that you get with the device is much more geared to people who need that. And in addition, it's $500. You know, that's double the price of a Kindle. You can buy a Kindle DX for $500. So you might as well, you know, if you're going to be reading a lot of content and you don't want, you know, some people have a problem with the glare on the screens for you know, the backlit LCD screens. You know, if you don't want that, or if you're looking for something that's made specifically for books, then the Kindle is definitely a better option. I don't think the iPad will take a lot of the market share away from Amazon, but they'll take some. But the really cool thing, too, is the iPad, you can read your Kindle books on it. So you might as well, you know, if you're going to buy an iPad, you don't have to give up Amazon. you don't have to get rid of your Kindle. You can use your iPad like you use your iPhone or like you use your Kindle for the PC or whatever. You know, you can still use the device in addition to your Kindle to read it, you know, when you don't have your Kindle with you. You can read your Kindle books on the device as well.
And I think they said that they're planning an iPad-specific Kindle app.
Yeah, well, it'll be basically like probably a larger screen version of the iPhone Kindle app.
Now, when you have authors approaching you that want to publish their book on the Kindle, what advice do you give them?
First and foremost, you need to make sure if you're an author that you've got your book to the finished point. You know, sometimes authors come to me and they don't have their book edited yet. They haven't done a proofread. They haven't had other people look over the content. I do suggest that you get your book professionally edited. It doesn't have to be laid out. You can still use a Word document if you're just going to the digital space. Wait on getting your book laid out in print, PDF form, and for later when you're ready to go to print. If you're going to go to, do self-publishing, then you can do it then. But, for the Kindle, that's not necessary. But get it edited and make sure that the content's where you want it to be, and then, hand the content off to me and I'll convert it and get it back to you in the format that you need.
Have you had some success stories of people that have gone the Kindle route and things have turned out pretty well for them?
Yes, actually. Quite a few of my authors have come back to me a couple months later and said, wow, I made more content sales than I ever imagined. I had one author a couple weeks ago who wrote me an email and said, I was expecting to sell 2 or 3 copies of my book. 2 weeks in, I've already sold 20 or 30 copies, and sales just keep on coming in. So that's the kind of stories I like to hear. And it matters a lot. How good your quality of your content is, how good the conversion quality is, because there's a lot of books on the Kindle store that just aren't really converted well. They have lots of errors and lots of little things that could have been done better. And it also matters a lot. What genre you're doing, because there are people who buy Kindles and people who buy ebook devices in general are looking for specific genres most of the time.
What are some of the genres that seem to go well with a Kindle?
Sci-fi and romance seem to sell pretty well in basically any ebook format. Business books seem to sell pretty well in the Kindle. There's a lot of people who like to read specific types of genre, and they'll buy those books in ebooks because they're constantly consuming them, and ebooks are cheaper than most print books, so they can buy more of the content and consume more content that way.
What are some genres that don't seem to have taken hold as much on the Kindle?
Books that are much more graphically oriented. Children's books are not necessarily the best sellers in the, right now. There's some things that you just can't do on the Kindle, or in a lot of cases on any device, because there's just limitations to the formatting right now. We'll see that change as the formats get better, and as the companies who are making the software, making the devices, start to figure out ways to make better quality content, more graphically oriented content come through. But business books are fine. Photography books are okay. The e-ink screen is not really that great, but if you get the book on the iPhone or if you get the book on your Kindle for the PC app, then it's not a problem. There's some things that just don't work. If you've got a book that's laid out with graphics where every page is essentially an image, then you probably don't want to do that in the Kindle format. You might want to stick to a PDF because it's better in PDF format.
Now, once people publish their books, are you offering any assistance in how to market them so they'll find a better audience on the Kindle?
I do offer a little bit of assistance. Actually, in a couple of months, I'll be offering distribution services to my clients.
What's that going to look like?
If you want to get your book up on Sony, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and all these other retailers, then after I do the conversion work, you can buy into a distribution package and be able to get your books out there without having to do it yourself. And it's one of the biggest problems that independent authors have, and small publishers too, is if you've only got a couple of books or just one book, most of the big players, the retail players, don't want to talk to you because they want to work with companies that have 100 books or 1,000 books. So I can leverage the bulk of my clients and go to those consumers, go to those retailers and say, look, I've got all this content. Let's get it in the store. And that makes it easier for my clients to get their content out in places where they wouldn't be able to get them out otherwise. But at the same time, it gives them the benefits that a big publisher has. They don't give up the farm in order to do those kinds of
things. Kind of bundling.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, the switch in the share which the author gets at the DTP goes to 70%. Is that June 1st?
It's June sometime. I don't think they've given a specific date, but it is in June, yeah.
That's a pretty big change, right?
Yeah, that's double. That's crazy. I mean, and you have to have, your book has to be priced between $2.99 and $9.99. and you have to opt into if there's an option, which right now there isn't a real option for you to opt into the text-to-speech, but that if they make that option available where you can check a box or something, then you have to make sure that that's, you know, you have to opt into those things. But that's a, you know, that's a good price point for most authors, and it's a great price point for consumers. So if you get your book in that price point and your book is good, then hey, you'll be making lots of sales, and double the royalties is good for anybody.
You don't think the $2.99 is too high for some titles that people are selling for less now?
I don't know. I mean, $2.99 is a good price point for a decent fiction title. I mean, some people like to sell their content at $1.99 or 99 cents, and they want to get the content out there and just in as many hands as possible. Amazon has obviously a financial reason to make that kind of the low limit. But I think ebooks that are priced at $2.99 are still well priced as ebooks. I mean, anything in that range, I actually consider that to be a really kind of the sweet spot range for a good quality ebook.
Now, if someone is out there with a published Kindle book now, under the prior split, 30-70, where the author's getting 30, do they automatically shift up to the 70% once the transition date comes?
Yeah, it's actually 35-65.
Right. Oh, it is?
Yeah, but it'll switch over automatically as long as you're in that price point and you opt in, opt into those text-to-speech and things like that.
Now, a lot of people notice that a high percentage of the bestsellers in the Kindle list are free. What do you tell authors that come thinking, gee, I really care more about being on the bestseller list than making money, and so I want to go free?
Well, you can't go free on the DTP. You have to contact Amazon directly. They have to give you permission. They usually would only do it for a short promotional period.
So now the lowest is 99 cents or $1.99?
99 cents is the lowest you can go in the DTP. But, you know, that's not a problem, really. I mean, what I tell my authors is don't look at the big picture, you know, what's in the top 100 on the Kindle store. Look at what's in the top two or three in the categories where you want to be, because that's where people go. When you go and buy a book on the Kindle store, you don't want to search through the whole, you know, 400,000 titles or something. You want to go look at, you know, if you're a sci-fi fanatic, you go to sci-fi. If you're a romance reader, you go to romance. If you want to read a business book, you go to business. And you're looking in the categories. So, you know, try to get your book priced competitively with books of the same kind of information and content, and price it, you know, at a good, you know, a rate that's going to make the consumer see that, hey, it's worth something. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to undersell your book. You know, if you're selling your print book for $25, you know, don't sell your ebook for $2 just because you can. You know, make sure that people understand that the quality here is just as good as the print, and in some ways it's better. I mean, there are a lot of features you get in ebooks that you just don't get in print.
Do you ever help authors think through strategies for reviews left on Amazon for their books?
Yeah, I mean, I try to offer whatever assistance I can when people ask me questions about things. A lot of people don't think about reviews on Amazon, I don't think. I mean, they know they need to get their book up there, and they might make the connection that, hey, reviews might be good. But, you know, there's a limitation on how much you can affect the reviews of your book. You know, you
kinda... Depends on how large your circle of family and friends is.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah. You're not going to be going out and paying people to hopefully not, at least, cover the reviews for you. But you know, if your content's good, you'll get good reviews. And the good thing about Amazon too is that when someone does a review on your print book, that review shows up on your Kindle page as well. The two reviews are connected together, and so that really helps. If someone is looking for your book, they don't have to wait for someone to write a review about the Kindle version in order to see that there's people who are, you know, giving it 5-star or 4-star reviews.
Now, I think we're all assuming there's going to be a Kindle 3 or whatever the number is going to be later this year. What features are you expecting? What features would you wish they would have from the point of view of somebody that's really sort of living and dying on the Kindle share of the market?
My prognostication on the Kindle 3 is essentially this. I think it will have a color screen. I hope that it uses the Mirasol display from Qualcomm. If they do that, I think they could completely revolutionize the ebook market, the ebook device market, because e-ink is such a minimal quality compared to Mirasol. So I hope they do Mirasol, and they just bought this company that does the completely clear overlay for touchscreen. So I think it'll have a touchscreen. I fully expect them to continue putting their software out on, you know, like they released the BlackBerry, the Kindle for the BlackBerry software. They'll keep doing that, I think, and trying to expand their market beyond the device. But as far as the device itself is concerned, I really expect it to be a much better, in some ways, a competitor to the iPad, but not necessarily, you know, not necessarily on all the functionality that the iPad has. I mean, we're going to see some cool functionality with the Kindle apps that people are going to start, you know, publishers are going to start making. But I think that it's never going to compete directly with the iPad, but it's going to give that little boost to functionality that someone really wants in an ebook reader. You know, you're going to be able to have some applications that are ebook related, that are book related, that are, you know, book review related, and, you know, sharing content. And, you know, I'm really excited to see what happens in the content delivery side of things too. You know, we could see Wi-Fi capabilities built into it. You know, we could see Bluetooth, which I would love. You know,
what would Bluetooth do?
Well, Bluetooth would let you connect it to your iPhone or to your, you know, to your cell phone, and possibly use some sort of, you know, especially if Amazon ties it together with the Kindle for the iPhone app, Kindle for the BlackBerry app, then you could more easily transfer books back and forth, or you could have other kinds of interactivity where you can use your phone for maybe internet connectivity. So, you know, there's some possibilities there. You know, I think that the basically, the door's wide open. I mean, Amazon has a lot of opportunity now.
If there's a touchscreen, do you see a physical keyboard?
I don't. If there's a touchscreen, I would expect them to go without a keyboard. And that could actually make the device have a larger screen size, which would be nice. You know, right now, a 6-inch diagonal screen could become an 8-inch. You know, we'll see. I mean, I don't know that they would give up the keyboard. They seem to be pretty attached to it. And they even put it on the DX and even changed it around a little bit. So... yeah, we'll see.
Now, the other e-ink readers, the Nook seems to have sort of stalled out because of all of its technical difficulties. The Sony Reader, I don't know why it's stalled out. I mean, the touch screen is just very difficult to read. The other ones, I don't know. But do you think that the Kindle has pretty much cleared the field of the other e-ink readers?
Not completely and not forever. I think the Nook still has a chance if they can fix some problems. The Sony Reader has a chance if they could, you know, figure out how to actually market it and make it sell. I mean, the Sony Reader was out before the Kindle.
Yeah, why has it not? It's sort of a mystery to me as to why it's lagging so much. What do you think they did wrong?
I personally think it's mostly an issue of how Sony has approached it. And when they first developed the device and put it out there, you know, as the Libre or things like that, you know, it wasn't really marketed as well as they could have marketed it. And Amazon, I have to say, Amazon had a real leg up on the competition in having their own bookstore. Being an ebook, being a book retailer, gave them just a big bump in you know, the types of people who would come to their website to buy it anyway. But, you know, Sony didn't come out with a device that had wireless technology until 2 years after Amazon did.
It was a huge lead,
right? And so, you know, you have to compete. And if Sony didn't, if they don't compete on the same market, they're not going to make the same kind of sales. And then there's issues with, you know, their touchscreen device is nice, it's got a touchscreen, but the touchscreen layer actually makes it more difficult to use, to read. So, you know, there's pros and cons. And then you look at how Sony has implemented their store. You can go to the Amazon website and buy an ebook and have it sent to your Kindle without having to interact with the device at all. Whereas on Sony, you can go to their website and search their ebook store, but you can't buy any content on their ebook store.
Really? I didn't realize that.
You have to download their proprietary software, which actually wasn't available for the Mac until kind of recently. You have to download their software. You can only buy the content in the software, and then you have to plug in your device and transfer it over. And so it's just a, you know, from a user perspective, there's so much more you have to do and so much more possibility for breaking it, you know. And not getting it right and doing something and having to call support. And then you don't want to mess with that. You know, consumers are looking for something that's easy, that, you know, that works well for them and that they don't have to mess with or worry about. And I think that's where Sony has kind of broken their chain. If they can fix that, they can come back. They've got some really good readers. I like their readers a lot. I mean, they've got some good functionality in them, and they read EPUB, which is a good format. But, you know, if they don't work on that user experience, they're not going to ever take over Amazon for sure.
What's your take? I'm sure you've been following the news, Macmillan versus Amazon and the pricing and the Apple publishers and all that. What's going on and what's going to happen?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure what's going on. I think a lot of the publishers are trying to find where they can make more money. You know, they're looking for any way to bring digital sales to a place where they feel they can make their margins are better. And, you know, there's a real question here about value. You know, they're trying to assert that the value of an ebook is the same as the price of an ebook. And there's some questions I have about that as a valid idea. I don't think that that's necessarily the way ebooks should be valued.
What do you mean by that? You mean that the sort of intrinsic value of it as opposed to the cost of providing it?
Right. I mean, the value that I get from a print book is in what I can do with it. And if the publishers continue to hold back the functionality, if they DRM every book that they release, and they make it so that I can't do text-to-speech, and they make it so I can't do, put it on multiple devices and all these other things, it ends up making the value of that ebook lower than the value of a paperback book. If I can buy a paperback book for $15 and I can buy the ebook for $15, I'm probably going to buy the paperback because at the same price, I get more for my money. I can take that book and read it, give it to my friends, give it to my family, let them read it. I can sell it. When I'm finished reading it, I can, take it to Half Price Books and get some money for it. There's a lot of things you can do with that paper book you just can't do with an ebook. And if the publishers continue to say that value is equal to price, then I don't think that we're necessarily gonna have readers agree with that. I think readers will start to react and say, look, I'm not willing to pay more than $10 for this ebook if I can't do the things with it that I should be able to do with it, And so it's a big debate. And I see where the big publishers are coming from. They're worried. Big publishers are bleeding money left and right, and they're bleeding people. They're having to lay off people left and right because the publishing industry is really in a tumult right now. So hopefully what'll happen is that the publishers will start to see that, the price points that retailers are setting are good for them as much as they are for the retailers and as much as they are for the consumers. And maybe things will work out in a couple of months or a couple of years at the most when the numbers start to really be seen.
Your own business, plans for the future, anything, new developments in the works? What's ahead in the next year?
I'm in the process of hiring my first person.
Congratulations.
Yes, I'm very excited about that.
What will they be doing?
Conversion work, doing conversion work for me. So that's really exciting. I'm very happy to start moving some of that work off of me and onto some other people and spend some more time interacting with my customers and interacting with the publishers and the retailers that are out there. I am planning to do some distribution. I'll start offering distribution later this year, hopefully in May. That's tentative though. I haven't inked any deals yet, so I'm still working on the details. Just continuing to address things as they come up. Actually, one of the benefits of hiring the person I'm hiring is that I'll be able to start offering iPhone and iPad applications, independent standalone applications for ebooks. So you'll be able to, if you want to sell your book on the iTunes store as an independent application, I'll be able to offer that as another format, essentially, in addition to the formats that I already offer.
I'm glad to hear that Joshua's business is passing the milestone of adding his first employee other than himself. And I could recommend his services from personal experience because he formatted a Kindle title, which I published at Amazon's digital text platform, titled A Poet's Progress at Bennington, Volume 1. He helped me by adding a flawless linked table of contents, as well as making sure that my ebook looked clean and well-organized throughout. You can check out his services and business information at ebookarchitects.com. I'm going to open the content section this week with the following excerpt of an author interview in November of last year with Matt Lauer on the Today Show. See if you recognize him.
The future is very uncertain with books, and the deep discounting will take care of itself. The uncertainty comes with the e-market. 5 years from now, how many of us are going to be reading books on Kindles and all these Sony readers, these beautiful gadgets and devices that are going to get better and better and cheaper? If half of us are going to be doing it, then you're going to wipe out tons of bookstores and publishers, and we buy it all online.
If you guessed that was John Grisham, who has sold by some estimates 250 million books, you are correct. His initial concerns about ebooks translated into a withholding of his books from ebook format until this week, when Random House announced that all 23 of his novels are now available in Kindle and other ebook formats. I just checked the Kindle store and saw that the pricing of the titles is a mixed bag. Quite a few are more than $9.99, including The Appeal and The Rainmaker for $11.20 each, and The Broker for $10.40. You have to wonder what sort of algorithms and pricing voodoo result in 20-cent differences in prices. But if $10.40 is too steep for you, you'll find The Client and The Brethren offered at the Kindle store for $10.20 each. There are also quite a few priced at $9.99 and below, including The Associate for $9.99, Playing for Pizza, 4 o'clock and the snowstorm is still raging here in downtown Denver. Pretty sight. Other books, Playing for Pizza and The Summons, at those are at $7.99 each, and The Partner is at $5.99. On the high end of the pricing are The Last Juror, that's at $18.45, and a French translation, La Ferme, for $24.95. This morning I asked on Twitter for favorite sources of ebooks. I was thinking of something else for the content section. I received some good ideas. Mary Go Blue from Forest Park, Illinois tweeted, favorite source for free ebooks is manybooks.net and for paid books, Amazon. Kip Poe from Canton, Ohio recommended smashwords.com, as well as visiting your favorite author's webpage, where you may find free material and maybe even have a chance to converse with the author. A couple of Kip's favorites are Tom Raimbault, that's R-A-I-M as in Mary, B-A-U-L-T, and J.A. Conrath, K-O-N-R-A-T-H. Robert Anderson, who goes by Monk's Mood on Twitter, loves Gutenberg Magic Catalog, as do I, and you can check that out at freekindlebooks.org. Time now for your comments. John Halkias emailed an interesting thing, which I hadn't seen mentioned anywhere else. What he noticed was that on one of the Apple pages or websites about the iPad, there seemed to be an indication that there were page numbers and information that tells you how many pages remain in a chapter and how many pages in the book. Since none of us have one yet, don't know if that is 100% accurate, John writes, but if it is, hooray. I agree, and I will definitely be checking that out when my iPad arrives on April 3rd. Alan Morris emailed from London, I'm a huge fan of reading, but the late onset of rheumatoid arthritis has made it impossible for me to comfortably hold and read books, particularly hardbacks, hence my switch to my fabulous Kindle. I've just downloaded the Kindle for the Mac software, and although it lacks a fair degree of polish, it is a welcome if belated resource for Mac Kindle users. Alan is the one that gave me the idea for the tech tip because he notes that you can access locally stored Kindle material not stored in your Amazon archive, and he's using this for an interesting use. He says that he's working on a conversion of an old first edition hardback. Seeing my conversion on the Mac will dramatically improve the editing process and will hopefully help others to improve the quality of Kindle conversions, which I have found very disappointing in the purchases I have made so far in the very limited library of UK material, Alan writes. Ronald Molnar sent a link to a job posting at Apple that Motoko Rich referred to in her article, and he writes, this posting may still qualify as the best insight into the strategy Apple intends to take with the iBookstore, especially with regards to independent publishers and authors. I like everything the job description mentions. You probably already have a number of contacts and listeners that could do an outstanding job in this position. With this strategy, and if the iBookstore is executed in a typical Apple fashion, they could amass a large amount of ebooks, both general and niche, very quickly. Although the leader, Amazon's Kindle store, is still dwarfed by print editions, publishers still withhold ebook versions as if they do not merit first-class citizenship. DTP, meanwhile, was revolutionary in its inception, but still suffers from lingering usability, support, and notoriety issues. Apple could be poised to change things on all of these fronts. I'll have a link to that job posting at Apple, and if any of you are interested, then that might be something to check out. Apple is going to go after content from independent authors. Thanks, everyone, for your comments. If you'd like to comment, you can send me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com, or you can leave a voice message at 206-666-2713. There's also a place that you can leave comments at the show notes page, thekindlechronicles.com. I'll have more details soon on the Kindles for Kandahar project. We're actually renaming that eBooks for Troops. We've raised $1,000, and I'm working with Ken Clark, a listener from Connecticut, to set up nonprofit status and really get this set up on a professional basis. Sergeant Andre Corbin is on his way to Afghanistan probably right now. He may already be there, and when he gets there, I will be sending him probably 3 Kindles and associated content to get the program going, and it's off to a real strong start. So thanks for everyone who contributed, and stay tuned for more details. I want to thank Sabina Kirstein for reaching out to me at South by Southwest on Monday. We met up at the Future of the Book Publishing panel, and it was fun to learn about her life and work in Connecticut. You can subscribe to my new podcast about the ebook. That's at thereadingedge.com. You can also find it at iTunes. My interview here at the Kindle Chronicles next week will be with a representative of a project named World Reader, and they have brought 20 Kindles to a school of 11 and 14-year-olds in Ghana. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monegat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.